hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. This afternoon, of course, our special guest is Dr. Stephen Yates, and we're going to be talking about an article he wrote for newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. It's a two-part article on dissent in America to be relabeled homegrown terrorism. That's the title. And it's really talking about a piece of legislation that has been introduced to the basically to the Senate and to the House to set up a commission to investigate the threat of homegrown terrorism. But really, what are they talking about? Are they talking about Islamic terrorism? No, they're not talking about Islamic terrorism. They're talking about people who disagree with the government, who are concerned about what's going on. And there really are people in this country who want to change our form of government. But, of course, they happen to be some of the richest and most powerful people working within the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commissions. And these people are frankly subversive because they want to alter our nation and do away with our constitutional guarantees of freedom. And nobody has the courage to call them subversive. However, I'm sure when this commission, which will have 10 members, begins to hold hearings across America, they're not going to be concerned about the subversive groups that meets at 5080 68th Street in New York City at the Harold Pratt House, which is the center of the Council on Foreign Relations. They're going to be concerned about people like you and I who are concerned about our progressive loss of freedom. And the fact that government creates war after war after war in pursuit of the New World Order, the New World Religion. Well, Dr. Yates, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me back on your show. I always enjoy being here.
All right, fine. Well, I'm going to let you just pick up the story and tell our listeners about this new legislation. I want your input on why we should be concerned about it. And so you pick up the ball and run with it.
Okay, the bill that we're concerned with, I guess the best place to begin is just with the name itself. It's called the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007. Wow, what a name, what a mouthful.
All right, fine. They're not talking about Islamic terrorism, that's the thing. I mean, they're talking about people who disagree with the government.
Well, it's not clear from the text of the bill itself who they're talking about, and of course that's the problem because if you've read enough of these bills and followed the history of what's gone on under the Bush regime, that's who you're going to think of. And of course that's why I chose the title that I chose of Dissent in America to be relabeled homegrown terrorism. I suppose I could say a few words about the history of this bill.
It was you go right ahead.
First introduced in April, last April, and without any fanfare whatsoever. I can't come up with evidence that there was even a press release. And it kicked around in committee, and then finally passed in the House. Well, the number was H.R. 1955. It finally passed the House on October the 23rd by a vote of 404-6. If you can imagine that. Now, 404-6. Now, I don't know if you could say they didn't read the bill because it's not very long. You can basically read it in one sitting. For a change, we've got a really short bill here.
But it's basically all they want to do is set up a committee to begin to examine and look at the threat. Isn't that more or less what it's all about?
Yes, it sets up a committee. It's supposed to operate for, forget exactly, but I think 18 months. And it also, filing through my notes here, also establishes a center of excellence that's either university-based, which suggests that they want to pull academia into this thing, and of course there are academics who will jump at this to get that Homeland Security money.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, our guest this afternoon is Dr. Stephen Yates. And as Dr. Yates teaches back in South Carolina, and of course we have a hard time getting him sometimes because he's correcting papers or testing his students. And do you actually teach philosophy or political science?
I actually teach philosophy. I teach courses ranging from logic to ethics to introductory level courses. And it's good that you brought that up, because I found myself more and more having to introduce at least some of these ideas into my classes. I feel like the students, they have as much right to this information as you or I do. So I start doing units on war and what's going on right now, and I don't present necessarily a point of view, my own or anybody else's. I just want them to think about what's going on.
Well, I think that's really so very, very important. And one of the big problems in the university is so many of our young people are indoctrinated rather than educated. I know that's the way it was when I went to the University of California, but that was 50 years ago, and yet I suspect it hasn't changed a great deal.
No, it's worse. They tend to believe whatever comes out of the media, mainstream media, most of them anyway. That's not universally true.
Well, your job and my job is to try to get people thinking, and if we can get them thinking, we can get them analyzing. Well, Dr. Yates has written a fascinating article. You'll find it up on the Internet at News with Views. That's News with Views, or you can Google in his name. And the article is on dissent in America. And this legislation is passed in the House of Representatives with an overwhelming majority. There are only 6 votes against it in the House. And it's to set up this committee that's begin to examine dissent in America. And, of course, getting into this concept, this fear of the homegrown terrorism, but they never find out what homegrown terrorism is. And certainly we have to stop and wonder, who are they going to be investigating? Are they going to be investigating the Council on Foreign Relations that wants to change our society, or are they going to be investigating people like Dr. Yates and myself? What do you think?
I think that they probably already are keeping black books on a lot of us, or at least it's easy to speculate on that. The paranoid in me certainly speculates on that. After all, we can turn to the bill itself in Section 899B is entitled Findings, and just listen to the third one.
All right, fine. You hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment when we bring other stations on board. Well, I guess it's Dr. Yates, and he's talking about what's in this legislation. This legislation that's going to be looking for homegrown terrorism. Now, we're not talking about Islamic terrorism. We really don't know what we're talking about because they don't define it. But, of course, there is certainly a conscious effort here to, of course, want to label anybody who disagrees with the government as a terrorist. Well, certainly so many of the things the government is doing today are in violation of our Constitution. And, of course, maybe what we ought to do is start investigating the people in Congress who are voting for measures that are unconstitutional after they have sworn to uphold our Constitution. So you pick up the story there, Dr. Yates.
Well, this bill makes very interesting reading, just looking at some of the ways the terms are like violent radicalization are defined. They kind of give you a definition that goes around in a circle and doesn't go anywhere. Just listen. The term violent radicalization means the process of adopting or promoting an extremist belief system for the purpose of facilitating ideologically based violence to advance political, religious, or social change. Now, what do we mean an extremist belief system? The bill doesn't tell us. It doesn't specify Islamo-fascism, whatever that is. It doesn't specify 9/11 truth or anything like that. It could mean anything. In fact, part of my article argues that when terms like this are just dropped in our laps, undefined, they can mean anything those in power want them to mean, or anything those on the front lines of enforcing what the government wants can mean anything they want it to mean.
Well, of course, if we study the history of what's really happened through the years here in the United States, we find out, of course, that there once was a neo-Nazi movement in the United States, but if you get into the background of it, it was all financed by the FBI. And then we find that there's the Aryan Brotherhood here, a revolutionary right-wing almost neo-Nazi movement, but that was largely funded by the CIA. We had a militia movement in the United States. Concerned citizens who already believe that people should be, our citizens should be armed to protect our freedom from our government. And that was largely funded by the FBI as well. So what the government has done, of course, is time and time again set up these movements in the United States. And then, of course, we pointed to them and said, look at those terrorists. My goodness, we have to have lots more power in government to protect us against those wicked terrorists. And we could even talk about Timothy McVeigh. And he wrote a letter to his sister, Jennifer, saying that he was part of a secret special forces group involved in illegal activity. His partner, Terry Nichols, has made that same statement. The gentleman who was in prison with Timothy McVeigh has written a book basically saying the same thing. Timothy had told him about it. The book is called Secrets Worth Dying For. That's Secrets Worth Dying For. You can get it on the Internet. I've read it. They all tell the same thing about a secret special forces unit that was involved in illegal activity. And, of course, it recruited Timothy McVeigh to be involved in the bombing of the Murrah Building. Of course, the purpose of the bombing of the Murrah Building was to try to get through all sorts of legislation to control the American people. Fortunately, Congress wouldn't go for it. Then after 9/11, of course, why the attitude changed, and they did vote for much of the legislation that the government had tried to get through back in 1995. So, I mean, certainly, is there really a terrorist threat in America, or is this being engineered to justify ever more government control over our lives?
Well, that's a very interesting question. While listening to what you were saying there, the phrase that was going through my mind was Hegelian dialectic.
Yes.
So I don't know how many of your readers, or I mean, of your listeners, readers, yeah, your listeners are familiar with that, but I just think of it in these terms.
Why don't you explain to them what Hegelian dialectics are?
Create a conflict artificially and then step in with the solution.
I think that's a pretty good explanation of Hegel's idea of the thesis, the antithesis.
That's the quick and dirty version.
Right. And, of course, if you have a problem out there, then, of course, you have to have a solution. We have an attack on the Twin Towers, and the only trouble with that is that at 5:20 in the afternoon, another building came down that wasn't hit by any airplanes at all. And there was no reason for that to come down. If you've seen pictures of it, it was obviously a controlled demolition. And we don't know how Osama bin Laden got into that building, which was the headquarters for the CIA and the FBI in New York. How did Osama bin Laden do that? But as a result of that, now we've got to have all these laws to protect us from the wicked terrorists.
Yeah, this is true. Bill, I believe you're referring to Building 7.
Right.
And yes, it came down the same way as the other two buildings, although nothing struck it except falling debris, and
well, of course, that remains
a bit of a mystery, shall we say.
Well, that one, the whole base of the building just exploded. First of all, the center of the building exploded, as you would with a controlled demolition, so that the walls of the building would fall inward rather than outward. And then, of course, the base of the building momentarily, shortly immediately after, just dissolved, and the building came down, and it sure looked like pictures of the controlled demolitions I've seen in Las Vegas, or any standard controlled demolition. I mean, the whole base of the building doesn't suddenly give way just spontaneously. Something has to precipitate it.
Right. Now, I witnessed a controlled demolition of a building when I was 12 years old. The site kind of stayed with me. And, of course, I remember when the towers collapsed, there was just a thought that went through my head. Something just in the back of my mind that looks like a controlled demolition. And then I thought, I don't want to be thinking this.
Right.
Give me a break. I don't want to be thinking this. I didn't want it to be, I didn't want that kind of speculation.
Well, I'll have
to admit that. I resisted it for a long time.
I resisted those thoughts myself for quite a period of time, but eventually, after talking to people who were there, and we have a four-tape set on why did the buildings come down, and two-hour interview with William Rodriguez, the last man out of the North Tower, and he will tell you that there was an explosion in the basement before the plane hit the North Tower. He testified before the 9/11 Commission in secret, and they sealed his testimony for 50 years. Why wouldn't they bring that out at the public hearings? You would think that they would want to bring the truth out, or would they? Well, let's get into the background of this legislation, though, because I think this legislation sets up a committee. And this committee is going to be touring the country, going to be holding hearings, and studying this whole threat of homegrown terrorism. But they never tell us what homegrown terrorism really is, do they?
No, not really. But one of the things they do say in their findings initially, this is in Section 899B, the Internet has aided in facilitating violent radicalization, ideologically based violence, and the homegrown terrorism process in the United States by providing access to broad and constant streams of terrorist-related propaganda.
Well, now, are they talking about Islamic terrorist propaganda? Or what? I mean, why don't they say, if they're talking about Islamic terrorist propaganda, and yes, there really is. It's coming in on the Internet. It's coming in by satellite. So, I mean, that is at least something we should be concerned about. Of course, the whole thing is that much of this is financed by our good friends in Saudi Arabia. And, of course, the people in Saudi Arabia are good friends with the Bush family and the Bush administration. So is that why we're not doing anything at all about the fact that the Saudis are financing this whole radical Islamic movement, not only here but throughout the entire world, in Africa, in the Middle East, in Iraq, where, of course, money is coming from Saudi Arabia to fund the al-Qaeda. In fact, most of the al-Qaeda are coming from Saudi Arabia. In fact, 15 of the 19 terrorists who attacked the United States came from Saudi Arabia. Maybe we should have attacked Saudi Arabia, instead of attacking Afghanistan.
Well, I understand that the Saudis own a lot of stock on Wall Street, and so we were not going to do that.
I'm sure that probably plays a very definite part in it. Well, what is this about the Thought Crimes Act? You talk about legislation, the Thought Crimes Act. What's that all about?
Well, I'm not sure who coined that phrase, because D.V. Kidd did an article on this before I did. Well, I didn't refer to hers and mine or have it in front of me or anything. But that phrase was kicking around. That there's a piece that has been published on... Well, before I get into that, one more comment about the history of this bill. It's in the Senate right now. It's in the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. It's in that committee. That's where now it's called S-1959. Is the new number that they've given it. As far as I can tell, there's no difference between the two bills, but they have published, and I just ran across this a few hours ago, a fact sheet prepared by the majority staff, Understanding H.R. 1955, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act of 2007. I have read it, was reading it before you called, and it's disinformation.
What is it basically saying? Is it telling us that there's a real threat from homegrown terrorists here in the United States? And are those homegrown terrorists Islamic? Or are they people who disagree with the war, who disagree with the Bush administration?
Well, what this statement says is that the purpose of the bill is to study violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism using a method that has worked in the past, the establishment of a national commission. So they are studying it. Now, they are in no way restricting thought or speech. It says that there's a myths versus facts page. Where have we heard that before? That it does not legislate thought or legislate any violations of constitutionally protected speech? Well, my article never says that it does.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, I guess is that Dr. Stephen Yates, we're talking about the legislation to establish a committee to investigate homegrown terrorism. And Dr. Yates was simply talking about how the fact that he has a sheet that was put out by the staff. Is that the House of Representatives or the Senate?
This is in the Senate.
All right, fine. And they're saying that this legislation is innocuous because it is just a study. It's not to pass legislation. It's not to restrict thought. They just want to study what's going on. Would that be a fair appraisal of what they're trying to say?
That's what this piece is attempting to communicate, or is attempting to persuade us, is the truth about H.R. 1955. For some reason, they didn't change the H.R. to an S, but anyway, they create this national commission to examine the causes of violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism. And, of course, they come close to giving us a couple of examples over on the next page. They mention arrests of a couple of U.S. citizens who were plotting attacks against Fort Dix in New Jersey or the JFK airport in New York without giving any details. Now, I'm not sure of the details of those cases or why they would be labeled homegrown terrorism as opposed to perhaps criminal conspiracy. And of course, there's laws on the books now to deal with criminal conspiracy.
Well, of course, the thing is that certainly in many of our mosques and in our prisons, there is a conscious effort to recruit people into this radical form of Islam and to commit terrorist acts. Of course, we find in many of the instances, it is the FBI agents acting as agent provocateurs who've talked some gullible Muslim youth, idealistic, perhaps disillusioned with what's going on or angry because of what's going on in the Middle East. But time and time again, agent provocateurs hired by our government for $100,000 to $200,000 have talked young, foolish Islamic people into talking, making statements about their loyalty to Al-Qaeda or carrying out violent acts in America. There haven't been very many violent acts, but most of them have actually been encouraged. These statements have been encouraged simply by agent provocateurs. If this is a real threat, why do they have to have all the agent provocateurs out there luring young people into making ridiculous statements that could very well end them up in prison for the rest of their lives, or even offering to give them money to be involved in these Islamic terrorist activities? And, of course, once they take the money, why they'll be locked away for the rest of their lives.
Well, once again, Hegelian dialectic used these people to create a crisis. And I have no doubt that FBI, CIA, and probably other clandestine black ops type agencies have infiltrated law-abiding Muslim groups in this society in order to try to provoke them.
And I'm sure there are some radical Muslim people out there who are being indoctrinated in this radical form of Islam that was, of course, originally came from the Muslim Brotherhood that was financed by the CIA. And the CIA helped to finance the Hamas. If you doubt that, you need to get the book that we carry, The Devil's Game. That's The Devil's Game. You get to understand that there have been components within our government that's been financing radical Islam, you know, for dozens of years. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Yates. And Stephen, why don't you go ahead and talk more about this sheet that you have from the House of Representatives telling us how wonderful this legislation, this idea is, creating a committee so they can study homegrown terrorism. Go ahead.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, there is this myths versus facts page. Now, that phrase should be familiar to those of us who have been following the SPP.
Security
Partnership,
right.
Although that's another conversation.
Right.
But they say here, the myth that H.R. 1955 criminalizes constitutionally protected behavior such as political association. Well, we didn't, again, we didn't say that it did, or at least I didn't say that it did. But what the bill does is lay the groundwork for, by virtue of having created this national commission to study something that isn't named anywhere and isn't identified specifically. They just paint the whole thing with broad brush strokes. So, yes, they could be talking about Islamic groups, and I received an email to that effect that by someone who was a professed Muslim maintaining that, well, you singled out patriot, they were talking to me, you singled out patriot groups in your article, but this could certainly be applied to American Muslim groups that are in this nation, and some of them have been born here. They aren't immigrants. These are law-abiding citizens. They haven't committed any crimes, haven't threatened to commit any crimes, but yet they could come under the scope of this kind of legislation simply because they're Muslims, and Muslims have a bad name because of their association with 9/11. So there we are.
Well, you see, it would really depend upon who is on this commission and what they are going to study. Are they going to study the most powerful organizations, subversive organizations, the United States, the Council on Foreign Relations? I really rather doubt that. I think that they're probably going to spend more time studying patriotic or religious organizations that are pointing out the fact that we are losing our freedom because, of course, we're seeing more and more legislation passed that to restrict what we can do and, of course, to make anybody who criticizes what the government is doing appear to be subversive. Certainly there's an organized effort to disarm the American people, and yet they will point out that people who want to keep the American people to keep and bear arms obviously are plotting some sort of an armed uprising. I mean, it depends on who it is who's actually doing the study and their preconceived notions, because so often with these committees that are created of this sort, you know, it is who is put on those committees, what their preconceived notions are, rather than trying to get to the truth. It's very, very rare when these government commissions ever get close to the truth. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would agree with that. The composition of the commission, the bill specifies this, doesn't name any names, of course, but the commission will have 10 members. Let's see, one will be appointed by the president. And keep in mind that this may not be George W. Bush. It may be his successor. We don't know who that's going to be yet. One member shall be appointed by the secretary, and the reference there is to the secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. One member shall be appointed by the majority leader of the Senate. Well, that's Fancy Nancy right now, isn't it?
No, that's Nancy Pelosi. She's the Speaker of the House.
Oh, Speaker of the House. Okay.
The head of the Senate is, of course, the Harry Reid.
Right, right. Well, one member shall be appointed by the minority leader of the Senate. One member shall be appointed by the Speaker of the House.
All right, fine.
Okay, that's Fancy Nancy.
All right.
One member shall be appointed by the minority leader of the House. One member shall be appointed by the chairman of the Committee on Homeland Security of the House. And one member shall be appointed by the ranking minority member of the equivalent commission in the Senate, and so on down the line. So you've got a diverse array of individuals there making these appointments. I'm kind of reminded of that phrase that a camel is a horse designed by a committee. I'm wondering how anybody could think this commission could get anything constructive done.
All we can do is wait and see. It's going to be very interesting. If this legislation is passed, the commission will be formed, and we have to figure out then, is there any way we could use this committee to get truth out, to get them to begin looking at their truly subversive organizations working at the highest level of our government, that it plunges first into a war in Afghanistan, a no-win war, and then into a no-win war in Iraq. You know, maybe there's some way we could actually utilize this. We'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Stephen Yates. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, you know, if you had a commission of this sort, if you had anybody on that commission that could, for instance, begin looking into the control of the media, which I think is certainly the way that the media is used to suppress information. Is there any way, of course, that this committee could be used for a good purpose?
I like the thought, but I seriously doubt it. In fact, and I've been thinking here, it doesn't name names, like I said. There's no way an item of legislation could do that. But I have a feeling that they have a pretty good idea of, if not specifically who they want, the type of person that they want. And it's not the type of person who's going to turn their attention on the CFR, on the trilateralists, or any of those people. What they will likely do, some of us here in South Carolina were just talking about this a couple weeks ago, back when my article first came out, that they would rely on left-wing, on the research done by left-wing organizations like the Montgomery, Alabama-based Southern Poverty Law Center, which already disseminates tons and tons of information about so-called hate groups to police forces and detective agencies and organizations like that all over the country. It's extremely left-wing, the group's orientation. In fact, they've labeled historical groups like the Sons of Confederate Veterans, been labeled a hate group, which, well, I know some of those people. It would never, they're not even political.
Well, all we could do, Stephen, if the committee is formed, would be to try to certainly send them a lot of letters, a lot of information, and to try to get them at least to have both sides heard before the commission. That would be the thing that I would think could be done. And who knows, you might even be able to get some honest testimony recorded there. But anyway, of course, you go ahead, of course, in your second your letter, you begin talking about really the people who are really opposing the wars, who feel that we should not be involved in fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. We should not have our troops in, 130 nations throughout the world, who believe that the United States should not be spending more money on its military than all the rest of the nations in the world. Would it be possible to get people before the committee who wanted to talk about issues such as that? And we'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Stephen Yates. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Yates has written an article about H.R. 1955. Passed the House of Representatives with over 400 votes and only 6 votes against it. It's before the Senate today, and it's to set up a commission that, of course, will begin to investigate homegrown terrorism, but never defines what homegrown terrorism is. And certainly, the term there has nothing to do with Islamic terrorism. Now, many people may interpret it that, they can interpret it that way, but the bill doesn't tell it. Certainly, I'm sure people who are Muslim in this country would be concerned about the legislation, and with good justification. But I would think that people who are concerned about what our federal government is doing and the fact that it is acting outside the realm of the Constitution, and that the leadership of both political parties is dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of our country and merging us into a one-world government and a one-world religion, and certainly with a one-world leader, that this would be a subject that this commission would want to look at. So you pick up the story there, Stephen, and let's go ahead and get your views out there.
Well, there's a phrase in the bill, if I can find it, to the effect that they're going to abide by the Constitution. But, of course, I think the Patriot Act said that much. And, under the Patriot Act, a fellow was arrested, and then Jose Padilla, you're probably familiar with the case, was arrested. I don't think his hands were clean by any means. He had definitely been involved with some rather shady activities overseas, but that's not the point. The point is he was arrested in Chicago and 2002, they incarcerated him, and they just kept him on ice, so to speak, indefinitely.
But, of course, the thing was that they denied him the right of habeas corpus, and he was an American citizen, and they tortured him.
That's true.
And, of course, you do not torture Americans to get confessions. And you do not deny them the right of habeas corpus unless, of course, the people in government themselves are lawbreakers. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And you go ahead, Stephen.
Okay, the Padilla case is interesting. They did deny him habeas corpus. And, of course, we're talking about something there that has been a part of English common law or British-American common law going all the way back to the Magna Carta of 1215.
About over 800 years, and they totally ignored that. In other words, they seem to be, the government seems to be above the law, and they don't have to abide by the right of habeas corpus, and it's all right to torture people. In fact, according to the Military Commission Act, why, of course, they justify torture. You can bring in testimony obtained by torture and use it in the trial, and anybody who's been involved with torture in the past would be immediately exonerated as sort of a retroactive justification for torture. And what really bothers me is the president says we do not torture people, but then why would they put that into the Military Commission Act and he would sign it if we don't torture people? Why give people who have been the torturers in the past a free pass? Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. I don't think the Military Commissions Act actually uses the word torture, although I could be mistaken.
Well, they don't use the word torture. They use the word
extreme methods of interrogation.
You're absolutely right.
Or something like that.
But, of course, that's what they're referring to is torture.
Again, that's this fuzzy, fluid use of the language.
Right.
And you see it mirrored in this bill with phrases like extremist belief system, which are never defined.
Right.
And violence is also never defined. And I absolutely must share with you an email that I received from a reader that stood out in my mind. And is this what they're going to mean by violence? This comes to me from a reader. I was looking for the town, but it's not identified here. I'll just read it. At the middle school where I was a sub, the sign in the hall described violence as, quote, any word, look, or action that harms or hurts the feelings of another. And he concludes, so there you have it.
All right, fine. Well, of course, what they do is they use vague terms so often, so you really can't tell quite what they're talking about. And then they can change the meaning of those words anytime they want to. Well, let's go to Harvey, who's calling us from Florida. Hi, Harvey. How are you doing?
Good, Dr. Stan. How are you feeling this
doing
evening?
Fine, and we do appreciate your help and support for Radio Liberty.
Well, you've been sounding stronger and stronger, and God bless you, my friend.
Well, as long as God gives me the voice, why, we'll be here. So we're really very, very fortunate. I figured we're just about a little over 40 days since I was in surgery, and I feel stronger every day.
Well, you certainly sound better every day. I hope my phone connection holds up. Can you hear me all right?
You go right ahead. Yeah, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Yes, I'd like to ask Stephen. I could suggest some people that that committee could investigate.
All right, who do you think they ought to investigate?
I think we should start with Henry Kissinger and his association.
All right, fine.
I like this already.
All right,
and
fine.
Then we could go to Giuliani and his companies.
All right,
and
fine.
And then we could look into Cheney and the people at his country club and his hunt club.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you talk about violence, of course, you know, apparently Dick Cheney is not above shooting people. He shot one of his best friends there during a hunting accident, and people are a little reluctant to go hunting with Dick since that time. Go ahead.
Seems like he may be a firebug as well. There was a fire in his office yesterday. Maybe some documents were lost. And we could go to the Daddy Bush's Country Club, and we could look into Skull and Bones. We could start investigating them.
All right, fine.
And James Baker and Company, we know that they've done some dastardly deeds, so we could certainly look into them. And the whole CIA can be investigated. So I think they would have their work cut out for them.
All right, Harvey, thank you very much. I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Thank you, Dr.
Bye-bye, and God bless. You know, I think that what we really need to do is to see how, if this does get passed, that it could be utilized, at least try to get it utilized for a good purpose. They might ignore all the letters and emails and faxes we sent them, but who knows? We might even intrigue some people there into beginning to look into these other organizations. What do you think, Stephen?
I would say that that it certainly wouldn't do any harm. I mean, it's if the commission, I mean, if the bill is passed by the Senate and Bush signs it, then the commission will be created, and we may as well attempt to make use of it if we can. Have them investigate the gentleman in Florida mentioned at one point, Giuliani. I don't know how many people know that that Rudy Giuliani's firm, Bracewell and Giuliani, brokered the deal with that Spanish corporation to build the Trans-Texas Corridor.
All right, you're absolutely right. That
so this guy is not neutral at all.
And certainly there's a great deal in Mary Giuliani's past, which would certainly bears looking into. As he said, I'm a man. When I give my word, I really mean that, and I ask any one of his past three wives. Anyway, anything else? Let's go ahead to Bart, who's calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I pray that there are many new listeners listening to your program tonight because this information is so important for people to understand what's being discussed here. The people need to understand that there is a blueprint for tyranny, a blueprint for dictatorship, a step-by-step program in which you come in and you install your police state. They used it in Nazi Germany, Ho Chi Minh. It doesn't matter which one of the horrible dictators, Stalin, Lenin. It's always the same program, a step-by-step blueprint. And for the image people need to have now is that this blueprint is overlaying upon our beloved country and is being imposed in a step-by-step fashion. Mainly utilizing control of the media. And the thing that has me concerned right now more than anything else is that the ultimate line between freedom and tyranny would be the Second Amendment, which is, as of Wednesday, received a horrendous throat-cutting blow from our treasonous Congress in the form of legislation that will disarm military personnel, as well as police, and eventually more of us, through the use of psychological screening. In other words, a military person who may have had a stress incident on the battlefield 20 years ago or longer where they had to be administered some calming drugs, this would fall under the category of the psychological category, and they will be excluded from owning a firearm under this new legislation. And it eventually is coming to the point where we will all be psychologically screened by a Soviet model panel if we wish to exercise a freedom of Second Amendment self-defense. Furthermore, coming up early this next year, a Supreme Court, which has already shown itself to be completely uninterested in doing anything that will actually protect our individual liberties, they will be dealing with the Second Amendment issue for the first time since the 1930s, and I have not talked to anyone yet that is very knowledgeable in this that believes that this Supreme Court will do anything to uphold our Second Amendment right. I believe that they will take advantage of this opportunity to further the police state by declaring something along the lines, well, you do have the right, but we have the right to take it from you.
Well, of course, I think what you're talking about is the legislation that was passed in the city of Washington, D.C., that says that the gun control legislation was invalid, and people in Washington, D.C., the murder capital of the world, did have a right to have a weapon to protect themselves, and that case now is being appealed to the Supreme Court. I agree with you. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. Do you have a comment at all upon that, Stephen?
Well, it's often been said that an armed citizenry is going to be a free citizenry. And it is true that that just about every dictator has come to power. One of the things that they have, one of the first things that they've done is ensure that the citizenry has been effectively completely disarmed.
Well, of course,
they're disarmed. They're helpless.
That's what they did in Armenia before the Turks slaughtered the Armenians. That's what they did in Rwanda before they hacked them, 800,000 to the death. That's what they did in Germany before they rounded up the Jews. That's what they did in communist China. It's a standard pattern. I share your concern. Hey, thanks so very much for calling, Bart.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Bye-bye. And let's go to Vernon in Salinas. Go ahead, Vernon. Vernon, are you there? Well, I guess we lost Vernon in Salinas. If he wants to call back in again. Vernon, you're not there? All right, we're going to have to terminate Vernon, but he can always call us back again. Well, Stephen, you know, I think Bart said that there is a plan for a dictatorship in America. And of course there's a plan for a dictatorship in America, because the same spiritual forces are at work in the United States or at work in Hitler's Germany. People only have to study Operation Paperclip, where at the end of the Second World War, the CIA brought, you know, to the United States, you know, thousands of Nazi war criminals to work in, certainly in the rocket industry, in psychological programs, and certainly in creating new diseases. But they helped them, the CIA and MI6 helped 10,000 Nazi war criminals, including Martin Bormann and Adolf Eichmann and Klaus Barbie and Dr. Mengele and the others, to escape to South America, where they lived out their lives. Well, Eichmann and Barbie were caught by the Jews and taken back, but all the other 9,998 were, you know, allowed to live out their lives there with the full knowledge and help of the CIA. And that same CIA, those same spiritual forces, are at work, and they really run much of what's going on in America. The fact that most people have never heard this simply reflects the degree of control that exists over what the American people think. We've got a great four-tape set on the Operation Paperclip, and, of course, why if you can go up on the Internet and look up the Rat Line. The Rat Line. Fortunately, we have the Internet. You can check all of these things out. And I certainly would not be making this statement if we couldn't validate it from many sources. So, certainly, Stephen, you and I both share the same concern. There is a move towards a dictatorship in America. Would you agree or disagree with that?
I would have to agree, at least, the way things are looking. Legislation like this, and just the trend that we've seen since 9/11, it almost seems like each bill, each new presidential signing statement, each new directive, whether it's regardless of which branch, so-called, of government that we're talking about, each one seems to push the envelope just a little bit further than its predecessor. I wondered the Military Commissions Act, if it could get more extreme than getting rid of habeas corpus, and the John Warner Act, which was signed the same day, I think, gets rid of posse comitatus.
I think that was
so
that was in October of last year.
October of last year, and but this bill on violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism prevention seems to me like it goes further than those do, or at least in principle, just by the vagueness of the language. And of course, that my article began by criticizing that. If the terms are just left undefined, they can mean whatever those in power want them to mean.
And I think that what you have to do is have things very, very specific. You can't have them vague. Are they talking about Islamic terrorism? Are they talking about domestic terrorism? Are they talking about people who want to believe that the American people ought to have a right to keep and bear arms when there are people in key positions who want to disarm the American people? Would that be make you an extremist because you believed in the Second Amendment? I know we actually, in any of your question, want to question this, you can go up on our Internet site of RadioLiberty.com, and we have the material that was put out by the Anti-Terrorism Task Force in Phoenix, Arizona, back in 1997, 1999 there. Where they defined terrorism. This was distributed to all the police and sheriff's offices in the Phoenix area, and the FBI said that you can tell a terrorist because they they talk about the Constitution. Now, if you doubt that, you can get that, pull that down off our website, and if you have want to get a good, fresh, crisp copy, we can provide that for you. Is talking about the Constitution, or even talking about Christianity, or maybe believing that these are the last days, does that make you a terrorist? There are people in the FBI who think it does, and they'd certainly be willing to testify that. In fact, I had a personal call from a member of the FBI right after 9/11 asked me if I thought these were the last days. Why would the FBI be asking questions like that? Well, Stephen, we're just about out of time. Our guest is Stephen Yates. Do you have a website at all you'd like to get out?
Right now, I don't have a personal site. I'm at work on one. I've had a couple of blogs in the past, but I'm not a very good blogger. I mean, I simply allowed myself to get overwhelmed and couldn't keep it up.
I think we all
But I do have my material on www.newswithviews.com.
Hold that thought. All right, go ahead. Stephen was saying that you can get his material at www.newswithviews.com, and he's written a number of very good articles. Somebody, a caller, had called and asked about the blackout of Ron Paul's campaign. And, of course, how do you feel about that? Do you feel that there's been a conscious effort to keep the American people from realizing that Ron Paul has raised more money personally in one day than any of the other candidates who are running?
Well, there's been nothing about it in the mainstream local media here, although he set a record, was my understanding. But I think the attack dogs have come out because Ron Paul was definitely a threat. He's the only candidate of either party who's talking about the Federal Reserve, for one thing. And they don't like that, although it's possible to focus like a laser beam on the Federal Reserve as being directly responsible for a lot of what's wrong with the U.S. economy right now. Of course, and if you can focus on the fact that the U.S. economy is gradually tanking, or that the subprime mess is really just scratches the surface, you're going to connect with a lot of ordinary people's basic concerns.
And I think that there's certainly a lot of even very liberal people who are rallying behind Ron Paul, because he's the only person in either party who wants to get our troops out of Iraq. And I think that's a very, very popular issue with many young liberals today. And maybe they don't agree with everything and all of his positions, but they will back him simply for that one reason.
Yeah, many of us are very concerned about that, because the bottom line is we can't afford it.
Well, not only that, but of course the Iraq war is a non-win war. It's like Vietnam. We did not go into Vietnam to win the war. We did not go into Iraq to win the war. We did not go into Afghanistan to win the war. We've been fighting for 6 years in Afghanistan and 4 years in Iraq.
And they've got an embassy being built over there that's the size of the Vatican.
And of course,
which kind of tells you why there's no exit strategy.
And of course, we intend to keep our troops there indefinitely. In fact, George Bush, within the last month, got permission to keep our troops there indefinitely. Why
would
the American people want to keep our troops in the Middle East indefinitely? Hey, we're out of time, Stephen. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so very much for being with us, and thank you for writing these great articles on newswithviews.com.
Well, thank you for having me.
Bye-bye, and God bless.
You too.
And, of course, that was Dr. Stephen Yates. Hope you enjoyed our program with him. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is a time I do need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family, because we're truly involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political and ideological battlefield, and nobody else is going to talk about that. Nobody's going to tell you about the secret societies, about the ancients of wisdom, about the spiritual hierarchy, about the elder brothers that come from the other dimension and are influencing our policies. And if you want to check me out, go to their website, LuciusTrust.org. LucisTrust.org. Pull down the material. I get their pamphlets, or if you want to get the pamphlet on the spiritual hierarchy from us, we'll be glad to send you one free of charge. And then, ladies and gentlemen, we want to suggest if you have not yet laid in a supply of food, you really should have a supply of food that keeps you and your family going for 6 months to a year. And if you'd like to get a catalog, we'll be glad to send you one from Ready Reserve Foods. And, of course, you need to have these things on hand, and you need to prepare to look after yourself and your family and maybe your friends in case things get into real trouble. There's a shortage of food developing all over the world. You can go up and Google in United Nations talks about world food shortage, and there is developing a world food shortage. The price of food is skyrocketing. The price of wheat, $10 a bushel, $10 a bushel. And, of course, they're developing shortages across the world. So if you'd like to get a free catalog, we'd be glad to send you one. Or if you've got a catalog, don't put off making your preparations. Make preparations, whatever you can afford, but make preparations. And then, of course, we certainly want to remind you, you need to have a Berkey water filter. You need to have barrels to put your water in. You need to have pumps to get your water out. You need grinders and to grind the wheat if you have wheat there to sustain yourself. And, of course, they're all available through Radio Liberty. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. How would you take care of your house? How would you prepare your house if there were a chemical, biological, or neurological attack, a nuclear attack on America? Well, the DVD, which we have at a very, very special price, Sheltering in Place. Sheltering in Place. You need to get that. You need to get the book, which was originally put out by the government, but they don't put it out anymore because they don't really care about you. After all, there are too many people in the world anyway. Nuclear War Survival Skills. The book, Making the Best of Basics. How do you get by if you don't have all the luxuries we're used to? Well, of course, this book, My wife has used it when we go camping, when we go off and live in the mountains. And Making the Best of Basics is really an important book. We carry the potassium iodate that you'd want to have on hand if there is a nuclear attack. All of these things available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Why would anybody want a nuclear war? Well, you need to get my DVD called None Dare Call It Genocide, or my DVD called Planned Population Reduction, or our video on population control. There really are people out there who have a different worldview, and if you get into those things and you can ask for it, we'll send you a free copy of my monograph. It's called the Population Control Agenda Monograph, and it's really one of the best things out there, and it'll give you the information you need to understand what's going on. If you have not yet read National Security Study Memorandum 200, put out in 1974 over the signature of Henry Kissinger, it is a plan for worldwide genocide. They call it population control, but it's really about genocide. And this is why in Sydney and Botswana today, 24% of the women there, 24% of the pregnant women, 46% of the pregnant women are HIV infected. We can give you the U.S. Census figures on that. Oh, yes, the Census Bureau is down there to see what a great job we're doing. And we're doing a great job. 46% of the pregnant women in Botswana are all going to die of AIDS. Well, understand that we're up against truly organized evil. Please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty.